First of all, it's time to talk to Laura. Laura, just picking up on India, have you ever seen a bigger schmozzle in our politics?
Well, we have quite a lot of schmozzles these days, Philip, so, you know, it's a bit hard to call one bigger than the other, but it's not been good. It has not been good. It's just... I'll let you ask the questions.
Well, the federal court has thrown out one of the arguments by a man stuck in India who claimed his common law rights were not being met by implementing this ban. Would you expand on that, perhaps?
Well, of course, the legality of the move by the government to threaten jail terms or to, the idea that you could jail somebody for coming back to Australia if you're a citizen was one of the things that was questioned last week after the move was announced. Now, I think what's really happened here is people have sort of started to come to grips with just the sorts of overriding powers that government gave itself in 2015 when it moved from the old Quarantine Act to the Biosecurity Act, and the federal...
Hello. Good heavens, I think we've just lost Laura. An unprecedented event in the long history of the program. We are, of course, discussing matters arising on the eve of a federal budget, and we were then talking about the federal court throwing out an important argument. Any hint that she might be coming back? Okay, sorry, Laura, you just did a runner. Don't do that. Just defuse my pacemaker.
Am I back now?
Loud and clear.
Right. Where were we up to?
Well, we had been talking about the federal court. We have a constitution with an implied right of return. The words on the passport certainly suggest we have one, and it's now
we have a
bit problematic.
Yeah, it is problematic, and the court essentially said that, you know, the Biosecurity Act overrules all of those things, implied or otherwise, common law rights and the like. But in some ways, Philip, I think the legality question was sort of only one aspect of this story. I mean, there was obviously the suggestions thrown around that there was an element of racism involved in doing this to people coming back from India when it hadn't happened to people coming back from other countries. But I suppose I would start with the basics of explaining what was being done, not putting out a press release at midnight, sort of saying, well, we're doing this for the following really good reasons, and while we've got this two-week pause on, what we're going to do is set up more facilities so that we can get people back faster, more safely, whatever. And none of that was really forthcoming. And it did leave the idea that they were sort of making it up as they went along, which was a bit unfortunate given the lack of confidence in some other aspects of the way the federal government has been running things.
Our Prime Minister now walks on red carpet virtually in all his public opinions, coming or going. Would you roll out the red carpet for his National Centre for Resilience at Howard Springs?
Well, it's wonderful, isn't it? I mean, would you have thought of calling a quarantine facility a National Centre for Resilience, Philip?
Well, I left the world of advertising 40 years ago, but even then I don't think that would have passed muster.
Well, I mean, it was astonishing because it just sort of was casually dropped out there on Friday when the government announced that it was going to start flying people back in from India on chartered flights to repatriate people into Howard Springs. And it just, once again, it raises the question about what the priorities are. They go to all the trouble of thinking of a really fancy name for a quarantine facility, but at the same time they can't sort of really tell us for several days what it is they're going to do to try to improve the systems in the quarantine system to get people back when they're facing a much higher risk factor in India than in other parts of the world. They don't seem to be able to say what they can do to assist people on the ground in India, whether they can... I mean, they said at a Senate hearing on Friday that it would be impossible to really get a vaccination program going because Australian citizens were scattered all over India. But there seems to be sort of a certain lack of sort of... going on the front foot, shall we say, about trying to fix this, about trying to help people in India while they're there. And the times you would think would sort of require it because it's obviously really catastrophically horrible things going on over there at the moment.
Now, they could have kept changing names a bit further. The National Centre for Resilience at John Howard Springs comes to mind. Alan Tudge said that 15% of the people already in John Howard Springs have COVID, and he called the people there Indians.
Yes, that was a bit unfortunate too. I mean, the bottom line here, Philip, is that there was a huge proportion of people coming into Australia from India who were bringing COVID with them, and there were these concerns about new strains that were showing up, which weren't showing up till after the 14-day quarantine period. So there are very good reasons why the health authorities were concerned about how they should treat arrivals from India. But there's a big gap between being concerned like that and putting a pause on letting people into the country while you work out what you're going to do about it, and actually sort of explaining to people what measures we're trying to put in place to facilitate their return later on. I still think that that's the biggest problem with all of this, that they the focus on presentation, on political spin. The Centre for National Resilience and all that sort of stuff seems to take much more precedence over actually explaining to people, look, this is why we have done this. It's not great, but we don't want people coming in through secondary hubs because we obviously can't trace them. And we are working as fast as we can to fix this up so that we can get people back into the country without the risk of COVID spreading into the community more broadly.
Well, we've got to solve this issue of quarantine if we're going to get international university students back, overseas workers, essential to the road.
Well, absolutely. This all comes together in the budget tomorrow night in a way, because there's been all of this confusion as well from various senior ministers and the Prime Minister over the last few days about when exactly they think the borders will be able to be opened again. You know, at some stage in 2022. Now, there's a matter of self-interest for the government in this, and self-interest always rules in politics, as you know. Essentially, the economy is being carried along on sort of the back of this massive stimulus that the government put in place to counteract the economic impact of COVID last year. Now, that's going to keep working through most of 2021, but it'll start to run out, and our economy has always been so dependent on migration at high levels that it'll start to really take the wind out of the economy's sails. So they have to do something about working out a much more functional quarantine system, and it's one of those things where the government's been dragged kicking and screaming into looking like it's involved in quarantine, which I think is perhaps part of the reason for the whole Centre for National Resilience nonsense, and also the fact that they're making clear that it's going to be the Northern Territory government that runs this facility, even though it's a federal government facility. They just don't want to be seen to be running quarantine in any way, shape or form.
Now, we've been talking, of course, about lock-ups and lockdowns, and will the budget be a lock-up this year, or is that an old-fashioned notion?
No, we're all being locked up in our very own offices in the Press Gallery and Parliament House, and others are being locked up in Sydney and I think Melbourne as well. So we'll all be silenced for about 5 or 6 hours tomorrow afternoon until the Treasurer gets up on his feet at 7:30.
So is it a pandemic budget or an election budget?
Well, I think it's both, Philip. They're in this extraordinary position where the budget, the economy has snapped back much faster than anybody thought it would. There's been over 900,000 jobs added to the books sort of since the worst of times last year, and which in some ways is hardly surprising given the just the huge amount of money the government pumped into the economy. But without a doubt, if you look at the sort of trail of announcements the government's put out over the last week, the fact that they're sort of trying to remake themselves, if you like, as in a post-COVID world sort of image, and the fact that they've changed all of that debt and deficits rhetoric, which we've heard for so many years and which they persecuted Labor with for years and years, they've now abandoned that and are following, pursuing a low unemployment rate as a central goal of economic policy. And so debt and deficits, of course, don't count when it's the coalition in government. That's only something that happens to Labor. So I think there's a real capacity for them to try to remake what they're talking about on a day-to-day basis. They're going to be emphasising jobs, you know, giving money to aged care, childcare, all of those sorts of things. But I think one of the things that strikes me as we go into the budget tomorrow night is the messages from the government now just change so much that you just can't keep up. You know, one day they're saying that COVID is a huge opportunity for reform. Then they say reform is a vanity project. You know, their positions on almost everything change so regularly. You don't know whether you don't know what central line is going to emerge if they do decide to go to the polls later this year, because of that concern that if the borders don't open fairly early in 2022, the economy really is going to slow fairly savagely.
Going back to what I regard as the absolutely, totally outrageous suggestion that Australian Indians returning home would be subject to heavy fines or terms of imprisonment, the hard right, the ultra-right in Australia, the likes of Andrew Bolt and the IPA, have been critical of the decision. Some of the shock jocks have come out against the Prime Minister. He must be suffering some culture shock for that.
Well, I think it was rather a surprise to him, Philip, that he was being attacked by everybody from Andrew Bolt to Michael Slater, the cricketer. Certainly there was some considerable nervous within the coalition and some disquiet about the way Australian citizens were being treated. But at the same time, you had this sort of spectre of people being briefing out to journalists that whatever was the case, it was actually going down really well in voter land, that people thought it was good that they'd slammed the borders shut. And I think it's sort of interesting that the government in Canberra has always been very critical of states closing down borders, and have, I think, believed that they were doing that for base political reasons, because it is a popular measure. But I don't know whether I don't know whether it's been a complete success when they've tried it.
Okay, Laura, thanks for that. Enjoy yourself in the in your personal budget lockup, and we'll talk again next week.